This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
Hold on to that.
Welcome back to the Shit Show 2.0.
Okay, Boomer.
Damn millennials. Wow.
Did not know that.
Even flirters who are obviously mentally ill.
You want to be my wife?
Oh, this is going to go downhill real quick.
What is going on? And welcome to Take on the World with
Johnny McDonald
and Mike D. We are here once again in the cave. What's going on, bud?
The Bat Cave.
The Labat Cave.
The Labat Cave.
What's going on?
I don't know. I am lost my train of thought.
Woo-woo.
What's going on with you?
Left the station.
I just had a senior moment.
Great. Not too much. I'm kind of liking this topic you sent me.
Yeah, I'm kind of up in the air about it. I don't know.
Well, you said you saw it and you thought it was interesting. I had known about this. I had heard about this before. I'd watched some videos on this before. So
I think this is right up there with the word I can't pronounce.
Go ahead.
Hinterkaifeck.
No. Hinterkaifeck.
Hinterkaifeck murders. Which it was like, oh, okay, this sounds pretty interesting. And then I started watching some stuff on it. And like, dude, I don't know, man. My attention span is so fucking short.
So that's because you scroll through and watch all those short videos.
I know.
Instant gratification.
No, this one I actually watched a couple. I think they were like 15, 20 minute videos.
Well, I know on the one website I went, there's like a 43 minute video on this. Yeah. And I think it might be the one that I watched before.
Okay.
But this is the Circleville letters. And if you haven't heard about it, stick around. We're going to talk about it. But before we do that, we want to talk about the Deluxe Edition Network, which we are a proud part of. It's a group of podcasters got together, and we're taking on the universe.
That's right.
Basically, we help each other out, promote each other. Just like a couple weeks ago, we had from Barrel Age Flicks, we had Chase on with us doing Bigfoot and paranormal and cryptids. And I think it was very successful. We had a great time. We're going to make that a regular thing with him.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait. That was good.
So along with our regular stuff, we're going to throw in some of the paranormal and cryptid stuff. And we're going to have Chase be our SME, our subject matter expert. I think we're going to do the mysterious stairways in the woods.
Oh, yes.
So if you haven't heard about it, you know, take a peek at it. I don't know that I believe in them because I'm the resident skeptic. But I still find the stories interesting.
They're there. I climbed them.
Ooh, what happened? Save it for the show, bro. Save it for the show. Anyway, while you go to deluxeeditionnetwork.com, and while you're there, you want to check out the podcast of the month because we have them every month. And for the month of May, this month, the podcasts of the month are Barrel Age Chicks. Are you into movies, pop culture, and comedy? Well, you got to sit down and see what the ladies think. Come meet Sammy, Snow, Crystal, Harley, and Yen as they give you the chicks' perspective on movies and much, much more. This is the female side of the Barrel Age Flicks fellers. And they started up their own thing because the guys just talk too much, I guess. I don't know what it is. So grab a few beers and sit down and listen to the chicks talk. Coffee Brothers sources seasonal, award-winning, and specialty coffees, focusing on high-scoring and high-quality blends, espresso roast, and single-origin coffees, which are all small-batch roasted. Experience complex taste notes from fragrant and aromatic to bold and rich. Coffee Brothers Coffee is a two-person brother team, hence the name. They roast all of their coffees in small batches out of their New York City roastery. Go to coffeebros.com and use TOTW10 for a discount at checkout. Barstool Film School, a controversial comedy breakdown of some of their favorite flicks, old and new. Each episode, they take on your favorite flicks to determine if they pass the bar and join the ranks of the truly excellent bar movies. Good bar movies can be hit or miss, but you'll never know until you take your shot. And the first round is on them. I'm in for that. Yeah, those are some great podcasts. And also, check out that Coffee Brothers Coffee and put in an order and support the show. Thank you. Yeah. I tell you firsthand, I love that coffee. I'm not just saying it.
That coffee was awesome. First, the aromas coming off of it, the smell.
Yeah.
And then made it in the shop, made everybody jealous.
Oh, yeah. That was so good.
So, yes, thank you. Thank you for that.
Anywho.
Much needed.
So, moving on. The Circleville letters. So, you might be saying to yourself, what's so interesting about some letters from Circleville? It's a little town I've never heard of. Well, it's a little town in Ohio, so I don't know what's up with Ohio and all the weird crap that goes on there.
Yeah.
But Circleville, Ohio is about 25 miles south of Columbus, Ohio, with a population.
Wherever the hell that is.
As you don't know where Columbus is? It's kind of in the middle.
I don't even know where Ohio is.
It's the next state over from us, dude. To the left, to the
Illinois. Left.
It's before Illinois.
You know, it drives me nuts now when I hear people say Illinois.
Yeah. There's no noise in Illinois.
Oh, it's like my mom used to say, ain't a word.
And ain't gonna say it. So it's Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois.
Ohio's.
It's 25 miles south of Columbus. In 2020, it had a population of 13,927.
What is their Bigfoot? They call him Grassman?
I don't
remember. I think he's Grassman.
Grassman? So he was gonna climb the mountain, but then he got high.
He's around smoking weed.
So this little town was terrorized for nearly two decades, not by the grass man, but by someone sending anonymous threatening letters that exposed alleged secrets about residents in the town. So now when I research this, it makes it sound like they were sending them to everybody.
But yeah, that's what I got confused with too.
When you do the actual research, it seems like they were focused on one or two people. There might have been more. I don't know. It's been a while since I saw the program on this. So
now we'll just make it up as we go.
So I think that the letters started in the 70s.
Yes.
77. 76 or 77 is when they started. And so they went to like 87. No, 97.
Yeah, two decades.
Two decades.
Dos decados.
Very next line.
Yeah, Mikey, jump ahead. You're stealing my fucking bag.
Yeah. So, in 1976, residents of Centerville, Ohio started receiving peculiar letters disclosing personal details. Mary Gillespie, a bus driver, was falsely accused of having an affair with the school superintendent. The anonymous writer claimed to have been monitoring Mary's house, knowing about her children. So now, I'm gonna flash back and forth to some of these letters. And I'm going to let Johnny read them to you because he's got a creepy voice.
Hey, little boy, you want some candy?
We're going to have that window. Where it had the letter window.
Want to take a look at the back of my van? Are you gonna? Are these gonna be on the so they can see them?
I'll try to download them then.
Because it's just they're hard to read because the way they're written, this is very strange handwriting.
So this says P2. So I don't know. There might have been a letter before this, but
yeah. Why would you start your page two with maybe they ousted or outed somebody on the first page? This was to the Mr. Superintendent,
Miss Gillespie,
and then this was to the whore bus driver.
Yeah.
Mrs. Gillespie, stay away from Massey, who's the superintendent. Don't lie when questioned about meeting him. I know where you live. I've been observing your house and know you have children. This is no joke. Please take it serious. Everyone concerned has been notified and everything will be over soon.
Look, so I got to say that
everyone concerned has been notified.
That is some creepy shit. So this must be not the first letter.
This must be his other side piece. It's getting a little jelly.
This is not the first letter because in it coming up, it was about 8 days off. She received another letter.
I want to see what was on page one of that letter.
I don't have them in order.
See that I hate. That's what's great about technology. But then sometimes when you can't find something, like page one of this letter, it pisses me off. Oh shit! There's the thing and the thing you were talking about.
Don't say nothing. We're not there yet.
I know.
Don't Johnny jump ahead of me.
Who you think I am? Fuck it, I'm gonna say it. We can't help it.
We'll just keep going until we. So, the letters were postmarked from Columbus, but lacked a return address. Mary received another letter within 8 days, prompting her to confide in her husband, Ron. Ron had received a threatening letter warning him of dire consequences if he didn't intervene in his wife's alleged affair. Now, I'd like to find that letter. I know I've seen it.
We're going to kill you if you don't kill him.
There was some very harsh threats.
Is that the... I don't know if that's the husband. Let me see if that's the husband. Like, this person was pissed off. You done fucked up.
Hey, Ron.
Wrong person off. Oh, there's page one right there. I know everything. The sheriff. River. Why would they fuzz that out?
I don't know.
Stay away from him noon and as well as night. Oh, stay away from him noon and as well as night. If I can't get you together and you make a fool of me, such as the school has done, I shall come out there and put a bullet in that little girl's head. Remember, I haven't followed him for nothing. Too many think this is a joke. We'll see in time. I know where you live. I've been watching your house. Psycho.
Okay, 2 weeks later, the writer escalated threats, vowing to expose the alleged affair through various media channels like TV, CB radios, and billboard. CB radios were a media at the point.
Dude, that's crazy, man. Isn't all that tea talk on the truckers' radios?
Yeah. Mary and Ron confided in only three individuals about the letters. Ron's sister, her husband, Paul Freshour, and Paul's sister.
So basically did the opposite of what the letter said.
Well, the letter said you better come clean.
No, remember it said you better have Ron handle this shit.
Oh.
Or I'm going to handle Ron.
Well, she told Ron.
Ron was supposed to do his... I'm assuming Ron was supposed to go... I don't know.
Beat the fuck out of Massey?
Beat the shit out of Massey?
Mary had a suspicion of the sender's identity and with others. devised a strategy involving Paul writing letters to the suspect pretending to have identified him. So they did this. They wrote these letters. I don't know how they wrote them back. There's no
send it to some random dude.
Or they sent it to the person they thought it was. This tactic appeared successful as the letters ceased for a period of several weeks. On August 19th, 1977, a significant turn occurred when Ron received a phone call from the suspected letter writer, strengthening his suspicion about the sender's identity. Why are they not releasing that information?
I don't know. Maybe it's under investigation.
I don't know.
Well, or it was at the time.
Well, there was a whole... Well, here we'll get into it.
No, this whole thing is so weird.
Yes. Despite the caller's claim of observing Ron's truck, Ron armed himself with a gun and left in America. His pickup truck. Shortly after, Ron was discovered dead in his pickup truck, having crashed into a tree.
Wait, crashed into a tree?
Investigation revealed he had discharged his gun before his crash.
Hmm.
Sheriff Dwight Radcliffe investigated the crash, initially considering foul play, but later ruling Ron's death an accident, attributing it to drunk driving. Despite the sheriff's conclusion, subsequent letters accused him of a cover-up. Paul claimed the sheriff initially suspected foul play until the prime suspect passed a polygraph test.
Whoa, where was he going? Was he going to this guy's house to go?
I think he was going after the dude who he thought it was.
And he freaking got so drunk, he crashed into a tree and discharged his shotgun. Listen, I'm not going to, dude.
I think it was a .22 caliber revolver.
The drink is pretty strong. People do some crazy stuff.
Well, they said his blood alcohol level was found to be 0.16, twice the legal limit, which surprised many who knew him that they didn't perceive him as a heavy drinker.
Wait, so there was a limit in the 70s?
0.08?
I thought it was like legal to drive drunk. No, I mean, I'm not. I've heard stories of people getting, well, I guess pulled over. And one is a person I know that stopped at the, this was the 70s, stopped at the toll booth. I guess they like fell asleep or something. thing. And a cop comes up and is like, empty bottle of whiskey on the floor. Like, hey, you all right? Oh, yeah. Where are you going? I'm going home. Just slow it down a little bit.
Or they tell him to pull over and sleep it off.
Yeah. Anyways, I digress.
So here's where it gets a little twisty, even more.
Oh, twist it up, baby.
Mary and the superintendent eventually admitted to the relationship, asserting it had begun after letters were received.
I mean, what are the odds? Like, I'm starting to like this lady bus driver.
So
she's pretty good looking.
Apparently the letter writer might have known what they were talking about.
I don't know. Do you believe that
it happened afterwards?
It happened afterwards?
Just probably
coincidentally.
Not. Probably not.
I mean, anyways, sorry, go ahead.
In February 1983, Mary faced harassment during her bus route, with threatening signs being placed along the road by the letter writer. Fed up, Mary decided to remove one of the signs herself, but found a deadly booby trap concealed within it. The trap consisted of a box containing a small pistol designed to discharge if the sign was moved in a specific manner. Now, I call all kinds of fucked up on that.
Yeah, because anybody could take that
sign up. A little kid could have pulled that sign up.
And that's taking a big risk, you know, assuming that she's going to take one of these signs out, that exact sign with multiple signs.
Yeah.
But then I don't think we're dealing with a rational person here.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
You know what? I wouldn't be fucking, well, maybe I'll save this towards the end.
Okay.
That's my conclusion.
Okay. So an attempt was made to erase a serial number from the gun, but forensic analysis successfully revealed it belonged to Paul Freshnor. Fresher hour.
Okay. We're getting somewhere.
Paul, who had recently separated from Ron's sister.
Fresh whore.
Is that his?
he's a fresh whore.
Claimed the gun had been stolen. On February 25th, 1983, Sheriff Radcliffe made Paul undergo a handwriting test, asking him to mimic the letters handwriting while verbalizing them.
Okay, I have a problem with this.
I do too.
There's obviously, absolutely, differences in similarities in handwriting. You could tell, like, if you look at some of, like, the way I write things, like, some of my letters connect in a certain way that's just kind of unique, you know, or how you sign your name. This, the letters that are on this, if you show the picture and you'll see it, they're like boxy. Like, anybody could do that.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's going to look the same pretty much if anyone wrote that.
Well, I feel. I disagree because you see how all the letters are canted? They're all canted in a direction. Like, he starts off on this end, like, only canted a little bit. And this end, they're tipped like a stack of chairs tipping over. Straight up, way back, straight up. And that's something subconscious. Every sentence is like that. Straight up, canted. Straighter up, canted farther. Every line.
Okay.
But that's what these handwriting people
right
look at.
That's to me, that's not enough.
And also, like,
I would look at the way you spell things, or like,
well, they do. Things. They look at grammar and the way they spell things. They look for pen falls too. So, like, some people naturally rest their pen after like certain words,
mm-hmm.
Like longer words. You rest your pen as you're moving your hand over,
mm-hmm.
and they'll look for those, and they'll rest it like here. In that the crook of the R, or the rest it down at the bottom, and you'll see that impression, and they'll do that a lot on the same letters, and if they repeat words, they'll do it when they repeat that word, and it's all subconscious. Yeah.
Man, I love things that have to do with like handwriting analysis, like a side note here, but like the Jack the Ripper case, and the Zodiac killer,
yeah.
A lot of that was they were looking heavily into their handwriting. But now I see what you're saying with that. That's interesting because I didn't notice that until you pointed it out. Like, it's very so you get sloppy towards the end.
Yeah. It's like, I want to get to the next line.
Right.
But he didn't do it as much here.
Right. Which makes me think maybe he was drinking.
You get tireder because you're
tired. You're irritated. Yep. You're getting more agitated so you're writing faster. And I feel like the faster you write, the more you're going to write like yourself. If you're trying to disguise your handwriting somewhat, you're being methodical about it. It seems going to look perfect, but the faster you go, the more imperfections you see.
Yeah. Following the test, Paul showed the sheriff where he had stored his gun in his garage, after which he was arrested and charged with attempted murder. So he stood trial in October of 83.
Because they thought it was him?
Not for the letters.
For the gun.
For the attempted murder of Mary Gillespie.
Damn.
He was never formally charged with the writing of the letters. Despite the absence of direct charges, the letters constituted vital evidence, and a handwriting expert identified Paul as the likely writer. The belief echoed by Mary and supported by Paul's wife, a similar suspicion. So everybody's saying, yeah, I think it was Paul. So
was there any, other than the fact that they found out who the gun belonged to, was he, did he have any relationship or anything with these people? Was he just Paul? Hey, I'm Paul.
Paul Freshour was mentioned all the way back in the beginning as one of the people that Ron and...
they thought that was doing it.
No, Mary and Ron confided in three individuals. Ron's sister, her husband, Ron's sister is Paul Freshour, and Paul's sister. That those were the three people that they originally confided in.
So wait, hold on. Go back up there again real quick. Where'd you have that? Yeah, right. Ron's sister, her husband, Paul. Okay, gotcha. So it's so his brother-in-law.
Ron's brother-in-law, yeah. So,
I like he must have been some kind of fucking kook.
Well, hold on. Wait, there's more. Additionally, Paul's absence from work that day of the booby trap discovery was attested to by his employer during the trial. Paul had an alibi for most of the day, but opted not to testify in his defense during the trial. Despite maintaining his innocence, he was convicted and sentenced to 7 to 24 years in prison.
Ouch.
While incarcerated, Paul received letters from the original sender, even though he was confined in
Lima?
Huh. I don't know what that means. And the letters were postmarked from Columbus. I guess it might be where the prison is. Yeah,
the prison.
Despite being in solitary confinement, the letters persisted, indicating someone else was responsible. In December 1990, Paul became eligible for parole, but was denied due to the ongoing letters.
So I wonder what the letters are saying to Paul.
Okay. One of those letters that I pulled up earlier. Let me see if I can go back and find it. Cause I left them up.
All right. This is, I was trying to, okay. This one's very hard to read. First it says March, looks like 1944, but I'm going to say
94. Maybe
I think it's going to be a 1994 or 99. March 9, we'll say either 94 or 99. It says, please know, letters were before 1999.
Or 77.
Or 77.
That could be a 99, too.
And it looks like a, yeah.
But it doesn't match those nines.
No, not at all.
But continue.
Letters were before 1999. Writer almost, I don't know, NRO?
Had. H-A-D.
Oh, okay. Writer almost had another incident. Man put in prison.
Innocent.
Oh, writer almost had another innocent man put in prison.
Ha ha.
Ha ha. Druid?
David Longberry.
Jesus Christ. Maybe you should read this, Michael.
Yeah, I'm good at reading.
David Longberry would have... would have if the man in prison now was not tried to trick writer with writer's own writing for home breaker Gillespie's. See what he got. Ha ha. He will not get out of prison or Radcliffe will take his place. There was foul play. And then something's blocked out, markered out. They are still together. Two teenage boys seen what happened. You always use high speed for elimination of someone if you must get rid of them. See, what the? What does any of that mean?
Radcliffe is a sheriff.
Yeah, I know that. They lost me big time. So, it just sounds like just nonsensical jibber jabber.
A lot of it is, but what he's saying here, Radcliffe, had to eliminate somebody. So they said it was a high speed accident, and that's how he usually tries to get rid of people. So it's
so they're saying Radcliffe's the guilty party.
More than likely nonsense, but
and then he killed what's his face? Ron.
Yeah.
To cover it up. Or pin it on Ron, which it wasn't pinned on Ron. that letter kind of loses me a little bit.
Well, it couldn't have been 99 because 94 he was paroled. He was finally paroled in 1994. Paul continues to assert his innocence while the true identity of the letter writer remains undisclosed. So Unsolved Mysteries covered this. 60 Minutes covered this.
I'd like to see the Unsolved Mysteries one of this.
Investigative journalist Martin Yant uncovered another potential suspect in a case and noted a sighting of suspicious individual near the booby trap location prior to his discovery. The suspect's brother owned a yellow El Camino matching description provided by a witness, further casting doubt on Paul's involvement. Postcard received by Unsolved Mysteries during filming. Content. Forget Circleville, Ohio. Do nothing to hurt Sheriff Radcliffe. If you come to Ohio, you El Sickos will pay. The Circleville writer. That's what was written on the postcard.
Huh.
There were some extra notes on the website I got this from. It said November 11th, 1994 was the original air date of the episode. Sheriff Radcliffe and Mary Gillespie declined interviews for the story. Alleged admission by Paul to Sheriff Radcliffe. Paul confessed to writing between 40 and 50 of the Circleville letters, supposedly. Following the broadcast of Unsolved Mysteries, Circleville writer sent postcard to show's P.O. box, but their identity remains undisclosed.
I mean, the admitting to the letters, I can kind of take it or leave it. Because there's a lot of, unless you read the transcripts of what they talked about, like how long was he being interrogated for? And there's a lot of like, I'm not saying it happened in this case, but there could be coercion.
Yeah.
Sleep deprivation, you know the tactics.
Right, like we talked about with the Reykjavik convictions.
Yeah.
Paul Freshour, who maintained a blog for years, passed away in 2012 without learning the Servo writer's identity. Recent revelations by Martin Yant, another suggested the involvement of at least three letter writers in the case, none of whom which were Paul. The son of the superintendent, who Mary had an affair with, a co-worker who was infatuated with Mary, and Paul's ex-wife, Ron Gillespie's sister, whose boyfriend was spotted near the booby trap location.
Hmm.
Despite the evidence, police maintained Paul was a Circleville writer. The case was parodied in Drunk History, where comedians speculated about Mary Gillespie's involvement, but no follow-up on this theory emerged.
Wait, hold on. Paul's ex-wife, which was Ron's sister?
Yes. We covered that earlier. Ron was, Paul was Ron's brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
But they got divorced. Paul and
oh, okay. Okay. All right. Yeah, what the? This is a lot of names. All these names and these accusations flying around. I have to read this thing like four times to understand it.
This Martin Yant just giving what they found could be other people who wrote the letters.
Right.
It wasn't 60 minutes, it was 48 hours.
Okay.
I was wrong.
Rawong.
In August 2021, 48 Hours featured an interview with a handwriting expert, Beverly East, who asserted Fresh Hour was the perpetrator based on handwriting analysis. However, he could have written letters. How he could have written letters from prison remained unclear, raising questions about potential accomplices.
I mean, I don't see how it would be unclear.
So my problem with the whole story is they make it sound like this whole town was terrorized by these letters, and it seems like
it wasn't the whole town.
It wasn't the whole town. It was just a couple people. But well, still, I'm
sure it's a small town. They talked about it.
But still, there's like 100 letters written.
We've only seen what, like maybe 12 of them.
Yeah.
And why are some of them fuzzed out? Some are like blocked.
Yeah. Why is some of it redacted?
Redacted. Yes. Yeah, it's odd.
Yeah.
But this is what I was going to say earlier, is I wouldn't be surprised if it was somebody within that small circle. Not some, because, or let's say Ron, but then he did die and the letters continued.
Yeah. So the suspects boil down to an infatuated coworker, a jilted lover, or a jilted wannabe lover.
Right.
the sister of the guy who went to jail for the whole thing.
Right.
So the ex-wife, which women can be vindictive.
Well, no, he didn't go to the jail for the letters. He went to jail for the gun.
Right.
The booby trap.
Right. Well, she would have access to the gun.
True.
And
she could have set him up.
Yeah.
Paid somebody to do it.
Yeah.
Here's the keys to my husband's car.
But they used the letters in court to convict them, even though he was never charged with writing the threatening letters.
So it's just an added freaking.
Yeah. Take that, bitch.
Extra.
An extra thumpy thump.
I don't know, man. That's just weird.
Yeah, it is.
But it would have to be, it just couldn't be some random dude that's like, hey, I'm going to fuck with these six people.
No, the whole thing was too personal.
Somebody was upset. They missed bus driver. Either she sounds like the freaking town bicycle, if you ask me. She pissed somebody off because she stopped giving it up.
That's the second bicycle reference in two shows.
What the? I don't know. I guess that's why you don't get involved with a bus driver. A married bus driver.
So that's the Circleville.
Well, that wasn't nearly as confusing as
the Hinterkaifeck.
So I was going to say it wrong, and right off the bat, I had it wrong.
I knew you were going down that road.
But those letters, man, the last letter I wrote, it just sounded like drunk gibberish. And the handwriting was terrible. I could hardly read it. And they're talking about two young boys seen the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that was mentioned in some place where I did my research, that the the grammar was horrible,
mm-hmm.
and the handwriting was juvenile.
Yeah. To me, that sounds like somebody got wasted and just went on a rant and wrote this letter.
I don't care. That's it. I'm done. Yeah. I'm going to write this. Stop fucking the principal.
They're supposed to get married in a bus in Mexico. But then she dumped me. For the superintendent, blah, 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 blah.
If I can't get none, nobody's joined.
Jilted lover, my ass.
So we took on the Hinter. No.
The Circle Jerk letters.
Circle Bill letter. Now you go take on the world.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Dylan.
And I'm Cameron.
And we're the hosts of Barstool Film School, a conversational comedy podcast about the very best Marvel movies. You know, the ones that are like perfect to watch when you're hanging out in a bar with friends. Now, I'm a writer and a film school washout.
And I'm a bar owner.
So we ought to know what we're talking about.
You would hope.
Tune in every other week, wherever you get your pods, as we take on a new flick.
And we will pair those flicks with some cocktails.
To see if they pass the bar. Now, what do you say, Cam? Shall we pour ourselves another round?
Let's do it.
All right.